This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everyone. This is Basma Farhad of the People Speak Radio. Here we believe when the people speak, they make a difference. You can listen to the People Speak live on BBS Radio every Tuesday night from 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, or by going to our site at thepeoplespeakradio.net. There you can also listen live to live shows or past shows in our iPod Ready archive section. That's thepeoplespeakradio.net. Now, if you have a Nokia phone, you can also listen live via satellite. Just go to the website for details. We're thrilled to have with us, once again, a very, very fascinating and interesting man, Professor David Ray Griffin. Dr. Griffin is an emeritus professor of philosophy of religion and theology. He has authored and edited over 20 books, many of them highly acclaimed, and he is one of 60 scholars worldwide included in the most recent handbook of Christian theologians. After reading the work of Paul Thompson and Nafis Ahmad, he became convinced that there was a need for contention, that at first sight things weren't exactly as they appeared to be. And he felt there was complicity from individuals within the United States, and he ended up joining the 9/11 Truth Movement. Welcome to the show, Dr. Griffin. It's a pleasure to have you with us again, sir.
Good to be with you, Basma.
Your book, Osama Bin Laden, Dead or Alive. I keep wanting to say wanted, dead or alive, but in fact, the question is dead or alive. Do you think he's dead or alive, sir?
Well, in the first chapter of my book, I present a lot of evidence that he is dead, that he had died in 2001. And then I submit in the remainder of the book that there's no good evidence to the contrary. Of course, there is a lot of evidence that he's alive, all these videotapes and audio tapes, but they're only good evidence if they're authentic, and I show there's no reason to believe they are authentic.
And when you say authentic, you know, there's a lot of suggestiveness in that statement. But before we go into that aspect of it, I'd like to ask you, for those that have not read the book, and the book is it is very concisely done, and it's very clean. You're saying exactly what you think, and you're saying exactly what people have said. You are quoting people from all over the world, in government and in other areas, and in our own government as well. Can you tell us, Dr. Griffin, what are some of the main themes of this book and the major bits of evidence that has led you to this conclusion that you believe that he is dead?
Well, one little hint is a funeral announcement in December of 2001, and in fact December 15th, that the funeral was held for bin Laden on that day. There were people who were interviewed who said they had attended the funeral. So that's one bit of evidence. Even more important is the fact that prior to December 13th or 14th, the CIA had been regularly intercepting messages to and from bin Laden. And since that, they suddenly came to an end. And since that time, there has never been an intercepted message. A third factor is that it's customary in Muslim traditions to bury people, I understand, very quickly, within a day or two. So it would fit that if he had died on the 13th or 14th, he would have been buried on the 15th. So you've got those kinds of evidence, and then you've got the fact that he did have kidney disease, and also then that there are many people within our own government who said back in 2001 or two that they were either certain that he was dead or that he was probably dead.
Well, there was something that I had seen that kind of surprised me when I first heard it, that Benazir Bhutto, prior to her tragic assassination, had made a statement that Omar Saeed Sheikh murdered Osama bin Laden. Are you aware of any of that kind of information about this particular individual?
Yes, and I discussed that in a long note at the end of the book because it's evidence I did not cite, unlike some other people who have cited that as evidence that bin Laden was dead. It seems quite certain that when Benazir Bhutto made that statement and when she was being interviewed by David Frost,
yes,
that she simply meant to say, Omar Sheikh, the man who murdered Daniel Pearl. She had just been talking about the sons of bin Laden, so she had the bin Laden name in her mind. And, of course, Omar Sheikh is known as the man who murdered Daniel Pearl. So that's probably what she meant to say. And that's strengthened by the fact that the very next day, when she was speaking to CNN, she said, I don't think General Musharraf personally knows where Osama bin Laden is. So it seems quite clear that she, at that time, thought bin Laden was still alive. And then 10 days later, speaking to NPR, she reported that there was a man who was assigned, a policeman, assigned to guard her house, and she turned to him and said, shouldn't you be looking for Osama bin Laden? So I think she just misspoke.
Well, I honor that honesty and that dedication to trying to find out the truth, because as I read some of these statements that, you know, have been presented here, it just proves to me that you have indeed thoroughly investigated any of the statements that were made. Now, for the most part, are these statements that you researched, or were they brought to your attention? What was the impetus behind you even caring? Most Americans don't even care anymore about Osama bin Laden. Honestly, I can't remember the last time the name has even been mentioned. All we hear now is al-Qaeda, al-Qaeda, al-Qaeda.
That's true, but on the other hand...
Why did you feel that this was important to write about?
Yeah. The White House and the military, the CIA, are still using bin Laden as the main reason, at least one of the main reasons, that we're in Afghanistan. And this has been repeated many times recently, that we're there to find the man who really attacked us on 9/11. CIA Director Leon Panetta recently said, I ask my people every day, where is bin Laden? There have been a bunch of stories in the paper, in the newspapers recently, about speculating where Osama bin Laden is. And the consensus is he's on the border between Afghanistan and Pakistan, probably maybe within Pakistan, and of course that's very convenient because that gives us a pretext to be bombing in that area. And so one of my motivations, of course, is just the truth of the matter, but another motivation is to show that at least that excuse for our bombing in Pakistan and Afghanistan, which continues to kill dozens of defenseless people and a lot of women and children, that the excuse, the pretext that's given for it is not real, that there is no evidence whatsoever that bin Laden is still alive. And we have, I got started on this by a statement by Robert Baer. He's the former CIA operative who wrote the book on which the movie Syriana was somewhat roughly based. And he writes for Time magazine now. So he appears on some of the talk shows in the evening, the Olbermann show and Rachel Maddow's mm-hmm. show. So he's becoming quite well known. But what's not so well known is that he has said emphatically that he's convinced that bin Laden is dead, and that he did a poll of people in the CIA who were supposedly on bin Laden's trail and asked them, can you say with any certainty that bin Laden is still alive? And not a single one of them would say that.
As a matter of fact, he said, and I'm quoting from your book, he hasn't shown up. I've taken in the last month a poll of CIA officers who have been on his trail, and what astounded me was not a single one was sure he was alive or dead. In other words, they have no idea. I mean, this man disappeared off the face of the earth. That has never happened before in my years in the CIA.
Yes, that they would completely lose track of somebody who was still alive, that they intensely wanted to follow, and that they would completely lose track of him. So that got me started, and then I was quite surprised to find the number of people who said emphatically they were certain he was dead. One of those was Dale Watson, who was the head of the FBI's counterterrorism section. He said he was certain bin Laden was dead. Ollie North was being interviewed by Sheenan of the New York Times. And he said that bin Laden was dead. And then when Sheenan said, are you sure? He said, absolutely. He said, and he says, all the guys that, you know, in intelligence that I know, they all say he's dead. Even Israeli intelligence declared that he was dead, and therefore said any new messages from bin Laden are fabrications.
Didn't the department that was in charge of the investigation of bin Laden, or in the search of bin Laden, wasn't that shut down shortly after President Bush took office?
It was shut down. Now, whether it has been reactivated, I don't know. But I know at least for a while it was shut down. It seems like that there for a while it was quite acceptable to say that bin Laden was dead or probably dead or perhaps dead. Even Bush said he might be dead, and Rumsfeld in 2002 would joke about it, and he says, well, the one thing we know for sure about bin Laden is either he's alive or he's dead. And so, you know, it was a matter of humor, and they could be quite casual about it. But somewhere along the way, that stopped, and all those statements disappeared, and they went down the memory hole. And now the press talks about all these new tapes, and they say, well, the CIA says it's authentic, so that shows bin Laden's still alive. There was a story in The Guardian, and, you know, that's one of England's best newspapers, and yet it had a story that began by saying the one thing we can be certain about bin Laden is that he's still alive. And their evidence for this was this most recent audio tape that had appeared. And they said, you know, that the voice was familiar, as if the fact that the voice was either sort of like bin Laden's or exactly like bin Laden's would prove that bin Laden was alive. One of the things Robert Baer made the point, and being in the CIA, he would know. He says, you know, with the technology we have now, voice morphing, you can take somebody's voice, take a recording of their voice, and you can make their voice say anything you want it to say. So even if that voice was exactly bin Laden's, that doesn't mean that bin Laden was speaking those words.
Well, what about the reports that that the tape and the voice had been matched to, I think it was like 97% probability that it was Bin Laden's voice. Are any of those allegations that this tape was authenticated true in any way, do you know?
Well, I say, first of all, U.S. intelligence tends to validate every. In fact, they have validated. They've either authenticated or failed to disown every Bin Laden
every tape.
So they're very credulous. Now, whether they really believe this, I'm talking about what they say publicly. The Brits have been more skeptical, and the British newspapers have been much more circumspect dealing with these. They will always say a voice, purportedly the voice of Bin Laden, or they'll say the Bin Laden figure or the voice on the tape. But the American intelligence will authenticate it, and then the press will just simply say, Bin Laden said, Bin Laden has put out a new tape, and so on, without any critical distance, and without even mentioning that many years ago, the same networks were saying maybe Bin Laden is dead. And so it seems like that there was a change that occurred around 2003 or 4, and it was suddenly decided it's very important to keep Bin Laden alive. And that, of course, is what Robert Baer says, and I quote him to that effect, mm-hmm. that it became very important to keep Bin Laden alive, and that a lot of people are feeding at the trough. In other words, keeping these wars going is making a lot of people a lot of money.
Yes, they are. More money than at ever any time in history, as a matter of fact. Interesting concept considering our economy is going belly up. Let me ask you, Dr. Griffin, why do Americans, or humans for that matter, choose to eliminate truth from their consciousness? What would make someone that hears these statements, hears the voices of our leaders, hears the statements of across the airwaves, and I've heard in many ways, why do they just kind of put that truth off to the side and do not accept it? When we hear Bin Laden is probably dead, why do we insist we need to continue this war to get Bin Laden?
Well, you would have lots of different reasons depending on the people and their situations. A lot of people, of course, probably don't believe it, but they have to pretend publicly to believe it, and that would include people in the mainstream media. On the other hand, you have this phenomenon that we know we call wishful thinking, or we really should call it wishful and fearful thinking, because it's very tempting, the things we would like to believe to believe that they are true, so that we don't feel like we're being dishonest. We don't want to think of ourselves as hypocrites. So it's quite often important to bring our beliefs into line with our wishes. And certainly there are things we don't want to believe, and many people desperately don't want to believe those. And one thing is that many Americans desperately don't want to believe that their government is lying to them. They desperately don't want to believe that they would lie to them just to make themselves and their friends and the people who donate to their campaigns wealthy. And so they will dismiss this and say, oh, well, this is just nonsense. This is conspiracy theory, and so on. And there's this phenomenon that psychologists have been studying for quite some time called cognitive dissonance. So even if it's apart from any of those kind of motives, just the fact that you've got a certain worldview and you've grown up with it and you've become comfortable with it, and, you know, maybe you had to work yourself into it. Maybe it was a lot of work and you don't want to go to that work again to change your worldview again. And so if something like this comes along and, ooh, just a minute here, you mean all of this has been made up, this is all pretext, they're spinning us and killing our children and, you know, sending them off to wars and spending hundreds of billions of dollars. That I no. And so they will dismiss this and say, no, I believe the government's telling the truth.
Well, I certainly understand that type of motivation. I know when I grew up from my childhood and childish thinking and started to understand the complexities of what was happening in our world and what I knew to be true, and some of this stuff is just so far-fetched that it's stunning to think. But one of the things that I found out was that I was crushed. My entire, everything that I'd ever believed in, everything that I had been taught, everything that I had taught my children was not necessarily true. And so, and I'm lucky I had a great basis to fill that void, but it was very unnerving. It is overwhelming. So I understand how people can sometimes do that. Let me ask you, why has no one been called to task on whether or not Bin Laden is dead or alive? I mean, we have our thoughts and we have our theories and we have books such as yours, which is a phenomenal read for those of you that haven't gotten it. But what's the price? Hasn't anyone been called on this saying, hey, we need to end this right now?
Well, no. You've got the New York Times saying, what are we doing in Afghanistan? This is a dead end. This is a quagmire, and there seems to be no purpose there. And yet they won't bring up this question, even though, as I report, they had a story back in July of 2002. They printed a story by a French writer, which talked about definitely that Bin Laden was dead. And so the Times knows the evidence. They know Sheenan's interview with Ollie North. They know Hamad Karzai has said Bin Laden is probably dead. They know what Israeli intelligence have said, and so on and so on. But they do not bring that up as a reason to get out of Vietnam. That's very telling, isn't it? Because it looks like Afghanistan is going to be Obama's Vietnam. And I desperately hope that won't turn out to be the case. And again, that's one of my motivations. But so you have people who know and are in position to do something like the New York Times. And they will not do it. They will not raise the question.
And that's interesting. Here, you know, you bring up these reputable media sources, or so-called reputable. I don't know anymore what's reputable in the media. But, for the most part, a lot of people have a great deal of faith in these the Times and some of the other media sources that you mentioned. And yet, again, you know, we go back to that selective blindness that we have in our communities. There's an interesting, you know, you have for much of your life, you were a professor of religion and theology, sir. And so I'm going to ask you something that I hope that you'll be able to help answer. The current evangelic movement is entrenched in the politics of today. Are Christians today willing to ignore the facts so that they can get closer to Armageddon and the return of the Christ?
Well, you certainly have a branch of Christianity that does believe that and therefore is motivated by that belief. And, of course, from my point of view, that's very unfortunate. It's based upon a completely outdated, discredited view of of the Bible and Revelation and all that, but it's very strong, and that segment of the Christian Church has been rather immune to currents of thought since the 17th century that discredit the kind of approach they take, but it's a fact of life that they're a very powerful part of Christianity in America.
And politics in America.
Yeah, yes, yes. And as the two got melded, the it's not as strong now as it was a few years ago, but it's still disturbing.
In fact, you're right. I have recently been reading a lot of articles about they're portending a potential collapse in the evangelical movement because of the straying of true Christianity into this pseudo-political Christian right movement that's developed within that arena, and they believe that eventually it'll just going to collapse upon itself.
Yeah, but it's equally important not to think of that strain as identical with Christianity or Christianity even in America. It's a big portion, but it's by no means the all of it or even the majority.
And no, I know. I'm a Christian myself, so I know that
yeah.
Not all Christians think that way.
And as a case in point of Christians who are willing to look at the truth and put their name to it in public, over on the 9/11 side of things, this book itself is not about 9/11, but as you indicated, I've done a lot of work on that. And there is a website people can go to that's called Religious Leaders for 9/11 Truth. And on there you will find, you can just go on Google, Religious Leaders for 9/11 Truth, and you'll find that many of the leading Christian theologians in this country have endorsed this site and signed the petition urging President Obama to authorize a real investigation into 9/11. But it's not just Christians, it's Jews and Muslims too, and we're hoping we will get increasing numbers of Buddhists and members of other religious traditions as well. But thus far, naturally, the majority are from the Christian tradition.
Well, that's wonderful. I had no idea that that site existed. I certainly am going to look it up and try to find out a little bit more about that. You know, when you talk about the truth movement of 9/11, to say that it's not valuable is absolutely ludicrous, because it is extremely valuable. But is it really effective, and do you really think we can get the momentum we need to revisit the 9/11 investigation through all of this?
Well, there are possibilities. One is the initiative in New York that is now called NYC, New York City CAN, NYCCAN, and people can go on Google and there, and they've just submitted 52,000 names for a petition to get it on the ballot at the next election. They're still wanting to get more names in case there's a claim that some of these people are not qualified to sign the petition, so they can still use more volunteers and more money and more signatures. But that's one way that we might get something. Another possibility would be through the courts. And another organization that has been formed is Lawyers for 9/11 Truth. Again, you can go on Google and find that. And so if anybody who is listening is a lawyer or has friends who are lawyers, go on and find out about that, and we can use more names on that too. And there is a case that's going forward now that has the possibility of bringing public exposure to the facts, and the facts being that there are simply no good facts that support the official story, and literally dozens and hundreds of facts that support the alternative story, which is that it was an inside job of some sort. Another route would be the political route, and I'll mention again another organization call political leaders for 9/11 truth. Again, just Google, go on Google and type that in. And you will find there that there are members, former or present members of parliament of, I believe, 11 countries now, 11 friendly countries that are friendly to the United States, and this would include the European Parliament, who have signed a petition calling on President Obama to authorize a new investigation.
And, well, I think what I'd really like to see is victims of 9/11 and their families for a 9/11 truth movement. And why aren't we seeing that?
Well, in a way, there has been. The families, of course, were the ones who got the 9/11 Commission established in the first place. Now, they ended up being very unsatisfied with that, and rightly so, because it was a complete whitewash. But it was mainly, wives and husbands and fathers and mothers of 9/11 victims who got that going. And many of them are still working very much for these causes. Now, you're right that there's not an organization of that name yet, 9/11 family members for 9/11 truth, but and I agree, and I would like there to be one, but we do have about 10 such organizations. I've named three of them. Another one is Intelligence Officers for 9/11 Truth. Another is Firefighters for 9/11 Truth. You've got Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth that has over 700 members. So it is a very, very big and growing worldwide movement. I was recently in.
I'm glad it is.
I was recently in Europe, and I lectured in 10 cities in Europe a couple months ago, and had good-sized and enthusiastic audiences everywhere.
Well, we're going to take a break right now, Dr. Griffin, and we'll be back shortly, ladies and gentlemen, with the author of Osama bin Laden, Dead or Alive, among many other books, Dr. David Ray Griffin. So we're going to just take a short break right now, and we've got lots of listeners and questions from our audience, and we're going to be taking those right after the break.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
Are you appalled that our country is spending billions on war while cutting funds for our libraries, hospitals, and schools? Are you heartsick at the suffering of the Iraqi people? Then join me, Medea Benjamin, in signing Code Pink's urgent call for peace in Iraq. Sign on today at www.womensaynotowar.org.
In our Constitution, the Founding Fathers laid a path to an economy that should have kept Americans free and prosperous. How we the people were tricked off that path into a world of debt and deception reads like one of the great mystery novels of all time. American Free Press compares author Ellen Brown's new book, Web of Debt, to an eye-opening thriller that will leave you feeling like Neo in the Matrix. In Web of Debt, the mysterious and often shocking origins of today's ultimate financial crisis are exposed, starting with its distant beginnings to its present disastrous climax, as the reader is shown that the way to restore America's true wealth has been with us all along. Please visit Ellen Brown's website, webofdebt.com, to see how America's money and future can become by and for the people once again.
This land is yours.
Join us on the People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact the world and make a difference. That's the People Speak every Tuesday, 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Join the World March for Peace and Nonviolence, an international three-month event spanning seven continents and over 1 million participants. With endorsements from luminaries worldwide such as President Jimmy Carter, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and Archbishop Desmond Tutu. The World March for Peace and Nonviolence seeks to bring attention to the need to end war and occupation, reduce arms spending, and all forms of violence. Please visit theworldmarch.org.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the sea, by the relief of summer people. One bright sunny morning.
Hello, everybody, and we're back with Dr. David Ray Griffin, author and investigative officer, I would assume. You know, we've strayed a little bit from the Osama bin Laden Dead or Alive book, and we've actually gone into a new book that called The New Pearl Harbor Revisited, which has been designated the pick of the week in some of the reviews. And this book is The Debunking of 9/11. And on our break, Dr. Griffin and I were talking about how intrinsically these things were with each other. They were all connected, this intermesh. You know, you can't talk about Osama bin Laden without talking about 9/11, and you can't talk about 9/11 without talking about Afghanistan and Iraq, and on and on and on it goes. And it is overwhelming. It's confusing. And it's nice to know, Dr. Griffin, that you have the style of your books has really impressed me, in that they're concise, they present the case with enough evidence to substantiate it, and then later on you inject things like in chapter 4, you titled this chapter, "Who Might Have Been Motivated to Fabricate Messages?" You know, who stands to benefit from these things?
Well, that's always the question that you should raise first when you're trying to figure out who committed a crime. Cui bono? Who benefits? And that's been something that the authorities have consistently looked away from when it comes to both 9/11, and then they probably would when it comes to the question of who's fabricating these tapes, if that question ever comes to the fore, if they will ever admit that these are fabricated. But my longest chapter in the book does present evidence that some of them clearly were fabricated.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that in this book, although this book itself doesn't deal with the question of 9/11 or whether bin Laden was responsible for it, the question comes up indirectly in this respect, that there are at least two of the major tapes, the ones I deal with, videotapes, in which the bin Laden figure confesses to being responsible for 9/11. Now, if you put that together with the fact that the FBI has never indicted bin Laden for 9/11, that is, the Department of Justice has never indicted bin Laden, and therefore, when you go to the FBI's webpage on most wanted terrorists and go to Osama bin Laden, you will find he's wanted for various terrorist attacks, but he's not wanted for 9/11. And that's pretty astounding to people when they discovered this. And so one guy called up the FBI to ask why not. And he got the chief of investigative publicity, and he said the reason we don't list bin Laden as wanted for 9/11 is the FBI has no hard evidence that bin Laden was responsible for 9/11. Now, if that would not be a headline that would grab people's attention, what would be? And, you know, people think about the news media. They say, yeah, they'll say, oh, these guys will do anything to sell paper. These networks will do anything to get ratings. Not true. They will not publish information like this. So the majority of Americans, I would say there's not one American, more than one American in 1,000 probably, and certainly not more than one in 100 that's ever heard this. And yet, to this day, the FBI does not list bin Laden as wanted because they have no hard evidence. Now, put that together with the fact that you've got these videotapes in which the bin Laden figure confesses to 9/11. Now, don't you think if the FBI believed those tapes were authentic, if they were sure that was Osama bin Laden himself saying those words, they would take that as hard evidence? I mean,
hard
what
evidence.
More? Hard evidence. Yeah, you know, that's pretty hard evidence. And they don't. So there you have evidence that not only does our CIA, at least a lot of our CIA agents, have no confidence that bin Laden is alive, that our FBI has no confidence that some of these tapes are authentic, so they don't provide for the FBI any evidence that bin Laden is alive. And I say, back in 2002, the head of the FBI's Department of Counterterrorism said he was dead, and they've never publicly made any retraction to that statement.
Of that statement, we have some questions here from our listeners. Dan in Idaho asks, do you think that Al-Qaeda was a vast global organization or a U.S. fabricated boogeyman?
If I had to choose between those two, I would take the latter. And I think the film The Power of Nightmares, although it was kind of a middle-of-the-road film, nevertheless presented a lot of evidence that the Al-Qaeda was not what it was cracked up to be. And now it may be that once Al-Qaeda got created, it took on a life of its own. That's up for debate, whether it now has some independence from the CIA. I don't know. That's possible. So you could say sort of both and, that it was U.S. created and may now have a life of its own. But on the other hand, maybe not.
You know, I still recall during an interview, I believe, at the beginning of the Iraq War or just before the Iraqi War, there was all this hullabaloo and trying to convince people that Al-Qaeda was just, you know, this force that was infiltrating the entire. The things that they ended up saying was that that there were 13,000 Al-Qaeda members at the time that we attacked Iraq. And I thought to myself, well, when you were counting them, why didn't you just arrest them all? I couldn't figure out why did we have to go to war when all you had to do was just pick them up while you were counting them? These fabrications and these statements that were coming out were so ridiculous sometimes that it made you wonder the credibility of this intelligence group. But then after the intelligence was presented for the case on attacking Iraq by Colin Powell, I mean, to me, I think my grandchildren probably could have come up with better evidence than that. A question from Scott from Missouri. I think it's a comment. Any comment on Obama and the Supreme Court essentially killing the 9/11 family suit against Saudi Arabia? Do you have any comments on that?
Well, I'm not a lawyer, and so I don't know the technicalities. My my understanding is that that we did some years back pass a law that granted sovereign nations immunity. Now, whether that was a wise law or not, I couldn't say. I would think it's not a good law that allows other countries to commit or pay for crimes in our country and be immune from prosecution. But if indeed it is the case, then in that sense their hands are tied. It does not, I should add, evidently prevent them from going ahead and prosecuting private individuals in Saudi Arabia and perhaps corporations, but that they can't prosecute, they can't indict, have a lawsuit against Saudi Arabia as such. Now, that brings up all sorts of related questions, such as what was the role of Saudi Arabia in relation to 9/11? And we had people on the early Senate investigation, the joint congressional investigation, saying that they found very strong evidence of Saudi payments to members of Al Qaeda. And of course, we had evidence of Pakistani payments to Mohammed Atta, and so on. And then that raises the question: well, what was Al Qaeda, and who was Mohammed Atta? At least the American Mohammed Atta, the one we identify as Mohammed Atta. And were they patsies? Were they being paid to do what? So there are enormous questions, and it's too bad that the lawsuit can't go forward because it might have flushed out some of those questions.
Absolutely. I guess only time will tell. Let's see if all the truth movements do, in fact, revisit all of these things. Scott in South Carolina, his comment is, "Why do you feel you're an expert on bin Laden? Your personal opinion is no better or any worse than anybody else's on this subject."
Well, that would be true if I hadn't studied the evidence. You become an expert by studying and comparing evidence, pro and con, and so on. And that's the case with any subject. I've gone into many, many subjects that my PhD as such didn't prepare me to do, but what a PhD does prepare you to do, ideally, and mine happened to be aimed at doing this, was to prepare you to be a lifelong student, meaning that you then had the tools, the method to go into any subject that interests you and explore it and become expert enough on that subject to be able to discuss it with other experts and be able to write about it. So, I've written books on science. My degree was not in science, but I've done a lot of reading in philosophy of science in relation to my work in science and religion. I've done an enormous amount of reading in politics and political theory, and of course that's relevant to all of these things. And so both scientific method and politics and political theory, these are all tied up in these questions. So besides simply having an education that does prepare one for branching out, mine happened to prepare me somewhat particularly for these kinds of subjects. But it's up to readers to determine whether I have done something worthwhile. If you look at the blurbs on the book, you will see that there are people who are authorities in this field and think rather highly of the book.
Including myself. Scott in South Carolina, hope you're satisfied with Professor Griffin's or Dr. Griffin's response. John from the Canadian Rockies says, questioned Mr. Griffin, it's Dr. Griffin, who in your opinion has the most to gain by the myth that bin Laden is alive, like a modern-day Robin Hood escaping the sheriff of Nottingham in Sherwood Forest?
Well, in the chapter that you mentioned that I had, who might be motivated to fabricate the tapes, I suggest that it's quite likely military intelligence, and that certainly while the Bush-Cheney administration was in office, I have a separate chapter on the opportune timing of many of these tapes, that it seemed like whenever it would have been nice from Bush's point of view for bin Laden to pop up and make some statement, there he would come. The most famous of those, of course, is the 2004 October surprise video that appears just a few days before the election between Bush and Kerry. And prior to that, it seemed like in the polls that Kerry was quite significantly ahead. But this October surprise video seemed to help Bush significantly. And even the our own CIA said it appears that this tape was designed to assist Bush's election. So it seemed to be at that time a combination of the Bush-Cheney administration and their Pentagon, including their military intelligence. And then behind these, of course, you do have the so-called military-industrial complex in which people are making really billions and billions of dollars. So it's the payoff has been both political and economic.
Dr. Griffin, obviously, one of the things that, and we have one more question that I'd like to get in before we start to wrap up, but in your opinion, aren't there many people within the groups that are now emerging, these clandestine groups that are emerging around the Middle East, aren't many of them also invested in keeping the myth of bin Laden alive?
Well, it could well be, and certainly Al-Qaeda, whatever it is.
And, whatever that is.
Yeah, and, you know, bin Laden's so-called right-hand man has continued to put out videos also. And this seems to be an organization that wants to continue to exist and to continue to keep the bin Laden myth alive. So sure, it's not simply people within the United States and Great Britain that have a vested interest in keeping him alive, but they do seem to be the primary ones. I mentioned Great Britain, and when I'm dealing with the question of fake videos, the very first one that I mentioned two videos that seem to be fake that were produced even before bin Laden has died. And the first one was by British intelligence. Now, we didn't actually see the video. We were just told that it existed and were given some excerpts, and it was used to prove that, yes, indeed, bin Laden was responsible for 9/11. So I say this: the British and the American governments have worked in tandem in this twofold myth that bin Laden was responsible for 9/11 and that he's still alive.
We have one more question. I'm going to try to slip in Mike from Australia asks, my question is, why has patriotism in the USA attached itself to politics? This doesn't happen anywhere else. Australians are patriotic about Ayers Rock or the Barrier Reef or our lifestyle, but never about politics. What do you think about that?
Well, that's a very good sociological question that I don't have the answer to, and so I won't even pretend to.
Well, I want to thank you and for the show. I mean, this has just been wonderful. For those of you, again, that have never read this book, it is an excellent read, and it has some excellent resources in here. So I highly recommend Osama bin Laden, Dead or Alive, or the new Pearl Harbor Revisited. I think these are valuable books. And for those that are interested in the qualifications of people such as David Ray Griffin in writing these books, I suggest you read these books. Find out. Look at the investigative process and see how they've come to this determination. Dr. Griffin, we really appreciate you being with us again tonight. I wish you all the luck in the world with your book and with getting the word out.
Well, thank you, Basima. It was a pleasure to be with you.
You have a great evening. And we also are going to have Betty Peltier with us on Tuesday night, June 16th. She is the sister of Leonard Peltier, who has been in prison for over 30 years, and many believe unjustly. Thank you all very much for being with us this evening, and let the people continue to speak out. Thank you.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the seawall, by the relief of fast, as summer people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering, if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.